Hey, football fans, Drew Brees here. Kroger Play and Owner's Box have teamed up for the next generation of daily fantasy sports. First-time players can get $25 in free entries, plus 250 fuel points. And you can score all season long with 2x the fuel points for every dollar spent to use at Kroger fuel centers. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Void where prohibited. Eligibility restrictions apply. 18 plus in most eligible states, but age varies by jurisdiction. Offer is valid between 8/6/25 and 1/5/26. Terms apply. See full terms and conditions at ownersbox.com/footballfuelpointsTC.
Ahoy, and welcome to War with a Mate, with me, James.
Me, Andy.
It's both of us. That's it. We are the sum of our parts. Two people, two subtle, humble, and brave men. We're here to tackle the campaign for North Africa and tell you all about it. We're here to document the tales, the trials, the tribulations, the ups, the downs, the lefts, the rights, the all-arounds, the hokey-cokey of playing this very long board game.
It's been a good one today.
It's been a thoroughly enjoyable one.
Yeah. My movement phase, I guess, turn two offstage one movement phase.
That's right. We're seeing out the end of upstage one of turn two. All that's left now really is my movement and some truck convoys, which are very vital, very important, but I kind of overlook it because it goes so fast.
Yeah.
But the whole game is going relatively fast, faster than I thought it ever would.
Oh, yeah. Although this one, we did have a bit of our classic rule. We had a couple of rule discussions and I guess we'll get to it, but I can't. The combat is so unintuitive to me, the land combat.
You lost your cool for a moment.
I did.
You lost your rag at this game.
Just staring at a table and not knowing what any of it means.
Yeah, you tapped into that rules confusion rage. I had a big portion of that as well when we were looking at parts of it. So I guess we should dive right into it.
Yeah, some fairly standard stuff. I just moved a lot of my guys who weren't on the front towards the front.
That's right.
And then the boys at the front had some fun.
Yeah, they did. This is something we touched on last episode, and it was my fury that really directed a lot of that conversation, because you really fucked me today, because you took my trucks.
I took more than your trucks.
You did. You took, my dignity.
I took three of your truck convoys.
You did.
One of them was a decoy convoy, which isn't a thing, but you did it, and it worked.
I have had that sat there for the whole game so far, waiting for a moment like this. So part of my rage was a bit of a poker face last week, but part of it wasn't, because you did take some actual convoys. I just knew I would have that little small victory in there, that bit of a win.
Took some convoys and two SGSUs.
You did, and they're not benign SGSUs. They actually are manufacturing some air combat.
Oh, good.
So they're gone now.
Yeah. So I guess to explain kind of what happened, I, in the organization phase, dumped a bunch of resources in the middle of the desert so my guys could motorize on their trucks, and then whizzed past your sort of front line using some of that enhanced mobility.
There was a gap, and you seized it.
I did. So those two, they're going to die.
They are, and I'm glad you're aware of that, because just from a vengeful point of view, which I am nothing if not a vengeful man in this game, I'd need to play my part to an extent, again, within the confines of the game, I must stress. I have to play the part. I have to come after you.
Yeah.
Outside of the game, for my own dignity, I need to come after you. I can't allow you to get away with this. In real life, I feel like you'd hold it over me. You'd think less of me as a man. So I need to be able to right this wrong.
Well, if someone thinks less of you, the thing to do is definitely get really angry.
That's what you do.
That always fixes people's opinion.
Yeah, you spitefully retaliate, and then everyone thinks that you're really cool. They think you're a strong personality. So you did. You zipped up, you darted straight through my lines, and you shuffled your boys around, and you stole some of my trucks. You stole three truck convoys. Two of which were genuine truck convoys. One had quite a bit of fuel and some water. One of them had a lot of stuff, ammo, fuel, water. No stores, I don't think that... Well, maybe they did have stores. You got a picture there, I believe. I'm pretty sure they had stores. And regardless, it's 16 trucks in that convoy. So they're all worth me keeping. You got that there?
No stores.
No stores.
4 water trucks, 4 fuel trucks, and 2 ammo trucks.
Yeah, and they're all medium trucks, aren't they? So that's a significant portion of resources I could have enjoyed on the front lines, but instead have been snatched up. And then one truck convoy is a single light truck carrying only water and the fuel on its back.
Which I'm just going to point out, you've put it in as, I guess, a decoy truck. It's completely out of pocket because you have men dying of thirst.
No.
It's completely unacceptable.
I have men dying of hunger.
I thought some of them were thirsty boys.
No, because all of the, well, not all of, but most of the thirsty ones are in villages or burrs.
Oh, okay.
There's only a few that have no water whatsoever, and to be fair, they are guns.
Oh, they don't need water.
Guns don't get thirsty.
Even the guys using them, apparently.
Yeah, they just drink gun juice. Yeah, you know, the sort of like oil, the lubricant for the guns. I imagine they just sup that up.
Horrible.
If you're not doing combat stuff, you don't need water. That's the rules.
I've been overtaking my share of water.
Rules of the desert. I thought you did the history segment, Andy. What's this about? You don't understand how water works. That's history.
That's something else. Maybe chemistry.
It's history with a hint of chemistry. So you took them. Wasn't pleased about that, but hey-ho, what could you do? I got a little, you know, subtle fuck you because I gave you a decoy convoy. But then you did take an actual convoy that had a lot of stuff, 16 trucks. That really hurt. So that took the shine off my little spiteful move. You lost 10% of your trucks in a breakdown.
Yes.
Because it was cumulative over several portions of movement.
I really pushed those boys.
Yeah, you really got them moving as fast and as far as you could. And that's actually where some of the rule discussions came in. I guess before we get into that, the rest of your movement circled around.
I also attacked the, is it the fourth?
The black fourth shorts? Black shirt. Black shorts.
Black shorts.
Black shorts, black shirts.
That's less threatening.
I mean, they must have wore shorts because, I mean, you don't want to wear trousers in the desert.
You don't, but I feel like...
Takes away from the vibe, doesn't it?
I feel like a lot of guys had to wear trousers.
Yeah, I feel like the uniform policy of the fascist movement in the North African campaign, they probably want to have a certain look about them, and shorts is not the look.
No. That's very Commonwealth.
That's very laid
Brits
back.
On tour.
That's very, I think the picture of the Maori division.
They're wearing shorts. Yeah.
But they're doing the haka. They need a bit more flexibility.
Limber.
Yeah, they're running at people with bayonets.
Although, if they were the only ones with shorts, they should have maybe the shorts were a factor. They should have gone... Hang on a second.
Yeah, let's look at the common denominators here.
Shorts.
That's it. Shorts and bayonets. If we had those on side, give me shorts and I will rule the world. I believe it was Rommel who said that.
Yes, it's a classic Rommel quote.
Yeah, you're big into fashion.
Yeah.
Sorry, fascist movement is what I'm thinking of. I get those two mixed up.
You need to fix that.
Yeah, God, you should see me when I try and buy holiday clothes. Anyway, moving on, you tried to box in my fourth black shirt division.
And it was a whole lot of nothing, although a tremendous amount of ammo was used.
Yeah, that was the closest fight we've had by far, and I think it speaks to that, because the result was a big fat zero.
Although they're engaged, but...
Congrats.
Yeah.
Happy
we had
couple.
A differential of one, which is not much.
So you closed in on my guys. You had the 7th Armored Division plus friends on one side, some of the infantry that you've been recruiting for them over the last few weeks.
Yep.
They were on one side, and then on the other you had, is it the rifle?
That was the 2nd Scots Guard, I believe.
2nd Scots Guard, it was indeed. Yep. So, yes, you had me boxed in both sides, and I thought, I'm not running away from this. I put these guys out here for a reason. Most importantly, they haven't fired a single shot yet. So they had all of the ammo that was originally prepared with them when the game started, as well as a significant amount of ammo in their trucks. The issue is they're on half rations, which means that they can't exceed their CPA willingly and they can't voluntarily enter an enemy zone of control. You took care of the latter by marching upon them.
Yep.
So they're currently locked in. And I thought, right, the fight is here. We're not retreating. We're fighting. So the fight began. We calculated the strengths. Because of the combined armor rules, it meant that your armor weren't garrisoned by enough infantry for them to be fully effective.
Yeah, I got about half my tanks... got through with infantry support, and then the rest of them were just a big blob of unsupported, which did add a little bit, but not much to my forces.
Yes. So I had 46 close assault points, which when distilled, when you divide by 10, 4.6 actual rounds up to 5. You had two sets to break down between the supported and unsupported, which was distilled down to 6.
Yes.
5 from the supported. The unsupported became 1 from 5, I believe it was.
Yes.
So you ended up, you could have had 10. So it meant that we were a pretty even match. And the differential was a +2 because we had the morale to factor in.
Yes.
The morale on my guys was a flat 0 and you had a +2. My morale, however, was boosted. I rolled on the cohesion morale adjustment table. They had a cohesion of, thankfully, because of the division being fully cohesive at the moment, they haven't fallen apart. You go from the biggest unit. It meant that when I rolled on the table, I needed an 11 to get a +1. A 66 to get a -1, and anything in between was flat.
Yeah.
And there I came, snake eyes rolling in, baby.
Of course.
So that meant it balanced that differential out that little bit more. So we ended up on a +2 overall. That then shifted.
Because they were on rough terrain.
They were on rough terrain.
Which shifted things. One left for me.
So a +1 overall.
Yeah,
so
we ended on +1, yeah.
So +1 is the final differential we ended up on, which I am more than happy with, because in the end, we fired off some heavy barrages. I pinned no one with my 4 barrages, which translated to 32 ammunition points. You fired off 2 barrages and actually pinned one of my groups. Not even just pinned, you killed a tow point.
I got a tow point and one. Did I pin the other?
No, the other one was fine.
Yeah.
So the other one was fine. You pinned one, took off a tow point. Which meant that, that's the reason I sat at what I did. It would have been close if you pinned another one. If you pinned my... I have a very good infantry unit in the black shirts with a close assault rating of 5. All the other ones have a close assault rating of 1.
Yeah.
So it's a huge gulf. So thankfully you picked those out, pinned them, took off a tow point. The fight commenced after the barrage, the close assault, and the close assault yielded nothing. Neither of us had any losses whatsoever. 0%.
Although, we are engaged.
We are. We wanted to announce it on the pod. so we'll take wedding gifts. We're registered. No, we are engaged, which means if we want to move away from one another this op stage, we have to expend 4 capability points.
Which I don't think your unit can do because of the half CPA and the fact they've been in a fight already.
So my infantry, so the ones that were involved in the barrage and the close assault, they have used 6. And if I want to disengage, that's another 4. And their capability is 10. So that would be everything, which means I could disengage and then not move. So it's pointless to disengage.
Yeah, and you also can't attack.
Not with those guys, no. Thankfully, that is just one of them that can't attack, because only one of them underwent the barrage and then defended.
Oh, yes.
Which means the other ones can attack.
Because they will use 3.
Yes. So yeah. I'm effectively down 2 infantry units if I attack you back.
No, because an attack is 5.
Yes.
Which would push
them into 8. It would be 8 at that point. 3.
But they can't voluntarily use more than half.
No, they can voluntarily use their whole. They just can't exceed.
Oh, sorry. I thought they couldn't use more than half.
Yeah, they just can't exceed.
Oh, right. Okay.
There is something else about more than half. I think that might be retreat, maybe.
Right.
God, I'm going to have to double check that. Because I was going off. Yeah, okay. I'm going to have to double check that. But I'm pretty sure they can still attack. Whether or not I want to is a very different question.
Yeah.
Maybe they'll just sit there on their laurels and not do anything. So that was the resolution of combat. They're sat there, they're engaged. A lot of ammo was spent. A good time was had by all, but no losses were had. Apart from me being hit by the barrage, I lost 100 men.
Yeah.
Which is kind of fucked, actually, when you think about it. So that was the end of that. You took my trucks. You did some breakdown. You took out my SGSUs.
Yep.
The real crux of today, however, the majority of playtime was spent debating a single rule.
Yes.
And that revolved around the continual movement rules. Hey! So the way that works, because I don't actually think we've got into this before on the pod, is during the movement phase, when the phasing player, the guy whose go it is, when they are moving their guys around, they can stop moving at any point. When they finish moving everyone where they want to move them and position them as they wish, when that movement is over, if, when they've moved, they've finished their movement within 2 hexes of an enemy unit, they can move again. So it means they can play the field a little bit, they can get into some tactical positions and play around. With undefended trucks, which is what I had, if you exert a zone of control, which means you're within one hex of them, you just capture those trucks automatically. But that would also mean you're within two hexes of them.
Yep.
So then you can move again, which means you can have a chain reaction where you stop next to some trucks, capture them, and then move again.
Which is, one of my guys did that. They took two convoys.
Yes, and that was the whole debate, because there is a section of the rules that says when you stop within two hexes of an enemy unit, you can then move again. If you don't stop within two hexes of an enemy combat unit, then you can't move. Now, that, you may realize, is I'm saying two different things there. Because part of the rules is referring to any unit, any enemy unit, and one of them is referring to an enemy combat unit.
Yeah, because they're both defined as glossary terms.
Yes, they're actual definitive terms. They're parts of the game that are defined specifically. A truck is not a combat unit, but a truck is an enemy unit.
Yes, because a unit's anything that has CPA.
Yes.
An enemy unit is something with non-parenthesized, basically anything that can attack outside of fairly special circumstances.
Yeah, anything that can, anything that's essentially designed to attack primarily.
Yeah.
And trucks are just an enemy unit. They're not an enemy combat unit. So we were sat there. It's in the same paragraph as well. We were like, what the fuck does this mean then? Because it's referring to two different things. So we sat there. We racked our brains. We decided we had to make a decision call on this. We had to make a ruling that will affect the rest of our playthrough, which is a good 20 years possibly of our lives. So it was a lot of back and forth for about an hour and a half, 2 hours,
yeah,
as to whether or not we rule it as any enemy unit or any enemy combat unit is what you have to stop within two hexes, yeah, of to move. And then we looked at the reserve rules. And it turns out the reserve rules, which is something you won't really have heard us talk about because we haven't used it yet, the reserve rules are designed specifically for this continuous movement rule.
Yeah, because you can put something in reserve and then sort of... It's like a trap card in Yu-Gi-Oh!
Yeah, it is, exactly. If it's in reserve, it doesn't trigger continuous movement.
Yes.
It's sat there, it's hidden, but it's essentially in low power mode. It doesn't have the means to move in movement phases.
It can move at the end. It can release at the end.
It can release at the end. You've got it in a sort of stasis, which means it doesn't trigger this continuous movement. And we didn't really understand the reserve rules a whole lot. We haven't implemented them because we didn't understand how they would be beneficial. And it was only after an hour and a half of debate that we realized this is the benefit.
Yeah.
Because the chain reaction of you getting all my trucks, it also applies to SGSUs on airfields. That is where it comes into play. Because if you put them into reserve, they don't trigger it.
Yeah.
You can put SGSUs into reserve.
Oh, right, yeah.
You can put any unit into reserve.
Oh, sweet, yeah.
So any unit could be put into reserve. So I was sat there thinking, if I read these rules earlier, this would not have been an issue. Because those trucks could have been protected. I saw how close you were to the front line. I saw how these trucks would have been fine if I did that. What I could have done, which would have really been funny, is put the decoy convoy into reserve. And then I'll lock you down for a turn.
Yeah.
Because continuous movement doesn't trigger. And all you've got is a single truck with some water in it. So we figured that out. It was a lot of back and forth. I was getting really wound up over the lack of clarity in the rules. Really harkened back to the days of Yonder, because fuck me, that was annoying.
Because there's no explicit rules about capturing stuff that's undefended.
There is for trucks. That's the section that I'd figured out.
The zone of control stuff.
Yes, zone of control.
Isn't that just in the zone of control section?
It is, yes.
Their rules are in there, but you have to piece, they're not...
Yes, there's not a captured equipment section apart from a little paragraph, not even a paragraph, like two sentences that says...
You can use captured equipment.
Yeah, you can use it against the enemy. And it's like, all right, cool. So it doesn't get, you have to look through the rules to figure this shit out. We found another thing actually today, hot weather. There's another hot weather effect that we didn't realize until today.
Yes, it affects breakdowns, which
I don't think
was in the hot weather section.
Possibly
it's on
not.
The breakdown table.
Yeah, we were already hot and bothered, so maybe we just missed it.
Yeah.
But yeah, wow, fuck me. It was so frustrating dealing with that ruling. And I got really wound up, and then when we finally found the clarity, I felt a wave of relief because I realized there are rules to specify in here. But Richard Berg, when he was sat at the typewriter that day, writing the segment about continuous movement, he put an erroneous combat in there. But I forgive him because elsewhere in the rules, it does clarify. I just wish he'd pointed to it a bit more clearly. But Richard, you are forgiven on this occasion. I will not beat on it too much. The New Year's resolution was to not get annoyed at the game. However, we're in September. The year's almost over, and I'm probably going to break that resolution next year.
Well, if you keep it for a year.
Exactly. That's all it needs to be. It's just for a year. However, you got a little bit annoyed, Andy.
With the combat?
Yes, with the combat.
I don't know why, whether I'm having an off day or it's just... I couldn't grasp it to be intuitive.
It's not intuitive.
Like, it's not intuitive, but I just couldn't... Like, every time I'm looking at it, I have to, like, work it out again. And I've, this might have locked it in a bit more because we went over it and I was quite frustrated. But, yeah, the land combat's a bit clunkier.
If there's anyone out there with dyscalculus or anyone who struggles to read graphs, this table is a salient nightmare because it is... The table is completely bonkers. The way it works is nothing like anything else in the game because it doesn't mirror and it doesn't work off... Each player has a different differential. It's a single differential. The table is laid out in a sort of pendulum where one side is bad for one and one side's good for the other. And that makes it sound sensible. You know, maybe we should put a picture of this on the Instagram when we release it this week.
Yeah. Let's,
and one on the website as well.
Let's check it out.
Because it to you have to see it to understand it. And it, I don't know, maybe we were just so wrapped up with all the other rulings that we were trying to figure out today that when we looked at it, because we've done Close Assault before. This isn't our first time, but something about it today
just
really fucking got us.
Yeah.
And, I mean, it makes sense. It's not that it doesn't work, and it's not that it's broken, or even inherently confusing. It's just looking at the thing. It's just a scrambled mess.
You also roll one... You do one dice roll, and it corresponds to three different things on the table.
Oh, God, like, yeah.
You do the base 66 system... You also add them for another row.
Yeah, you have to add them together. So the die roll, it's between 1 and 66. Getting rid of a few numbers, of course, because you can't get like a... You can't get a...
Anything with a 7.
Yeah, you can't get a 7. So you can't get any 7s, 8s, or 9s. But then you also add together the two d6s. So then you get like a 7 or an 8. And then that determines whether or not you capture prisoners.
Or if the other person retreats.
Or if you're engaged.
Yeah.
There's so many different things to look at with that table. It's such a jumbled mess. And you were getting so wound up.
I was just getting so confused.
Many, so many
annoyed.
Instances of us like going like, okay, so it's this. And then we took a beat. And then it was like, no, it's this.
Yeah.
And you were just sat down sunken in the chair with this look of pure detest and disdain at this piece of paper in your hand. And then there was a point where you were like, no, we should do each other's rules. We shouldn't do each other's rules. And I was like, we probably not. And then I was like, no, hang on a minute. We just, it's the same result.
It's the same result, but I think we should have rolled them the attacker rolls on the attacker table.
But with that, you're looking at it from a logical perspective of high result means good.
Which it does.
In real life, it does. But in the game.
Like in air combat, it does.
In air combat, high is bad.
No,
if you roll an 11, if I'm trying to down your plane and I roll an 11, I down your plane.
Yes, but the higher, like, the range increases. So if you've got a better result, it's like 36 or lower.
Yes. It goes up, it gets easier, but if you got a snake eyes, you always down a plane.
Yeah.
I don't like the
but
way
then
the game.
In other places, like breakdowns is just highest, and then, it's not consistent across the tables.
Oh, God, it's not. I've got a breakdown. Oh my God, why? I'm not annoyed at the game. I'm not allowed to be annoyed at the game. But if I was, why did they do it like this? Why the fuck did he design it like this?
I think this game could have benefited massively from percentile dice.
Of course it could.
It would have cleaned everything up.
A D100 roll for this game would just fix it.
Because also, I'm willing to bet they did a shitload of research. They probably worked stuff out as percentages and then shifted it onto this...
Well, it has to be percentage. Well, it's all ratio. It's all It's all based around scales and modifiers, and then it's figured out by rolling 11 to 66.
Yeah.
All they've done is reduce the number of results. But the thing is, with a 100-sided
you
die,
just have range.
You just have better range.
Yeah.
If anything, you get a clearer, more granular breakdown of things. And that's what this is about, isn't it? It's yeah. about making it as granular as possible to upset the people playing it.
Yeah.
Sorry, it's about realism. Sorry, it's about realism. That's what it says in the fucking
mean
game
prank
box.
On people who want to play it. I mean, aside from the real confusion, I still enjoyed this one.
It was good. What once yeah. we got down to the nitty gritty of it, it was just the moment when we'd realized neither of us took losses apart from my one toe point. We took no losses from the close assault after the whole debacle of figuring out the table again. And then yeah. it's just the moment of pause where we're like, so that was nothing. We just used ammo points. We're both sat here in the same position on the map. That was for nothing. we've just postured a little bit and nothing changed materially apart from we have less stuff to use. And our blood pressure went up a bit as well. So that was a hell of an experience. So, yeah, I don't know. Yeah, I'm running hot a little bit now talking about that one. That's...
I feel like I'm in a zone where I read all the rules now and I've now placed them onto the game, but I don't have them locked down enough and there's too many edge cases.
It is edge cases, that's what it is.
To, like, remember, so you are still checking. It'll become more fluent, but it's in that phase where it's like, is it this, is it that? Like, trying to remember.
Well, close assault, again, it happens sporadically. It doesn't happen consistently and... It's been quite lopsided as well, usually. I think the fact it was so close on the table, and this is the first time terrain has affected combat.
Yes.
Because I was in rough, which meant that we adjusted the table at the column, one yeah. to the left. So that shifted... Oh, hang on a minute. I think we might have done something wrong, possibly. Because if you shift the column to the left, for me that would be different. The result would have been different if I shift my column to the left. I think.
No, because we shifted from plus two.
I'm thinking it's two separate columns, that's why.
Because we share a...
It's the same axis, we keep an axis.
The same differential as opposed to planes where they work out at the same, but we have our own.
Oh my god, it's just happening again.
You did that earlier today.
My mind is being close assaulted. I did do that earlier today, I confused it earlier. I'm sorry, I'm going to stop talking about the table now. That's it, it's out of my mind. It's out of sight, out of mind. It's over. It's done. How do you find the day overall?
Good.
I reluctantly also say good.
Yes.
I lost stuff. I lost trucks. I lost a tow point. I lost SGSUs. I lost ammo. I lost a little bit of my patience. But overall, it was progress, and progress is progress, which I feel like needs to become the motto of the game. Because progress is progress. It's another step. Yeah. We're closer towards the end of op stage one of turn two. And that means at that point we're a third of the way through the practice scenario. Then we can start the actual game and we get a step closer to me winning my meal.
Yes.
Because that's what it's all about. It's about the meal at the end.
Well, this one's for a Kinder Bueno.
Yeah, but this one's for a Kinder Bueno, but I want the meal at the very end of all this.
Yeah, no.
Yeah, that's what I'm going to get, buddy.
No chance.
But while we're making a meal out of things, how about we stick in our napkins and we... I don't really know where the analogy was going, but I'm gonna stop reading out. We're gonna eat some of the listener mail up.
Okay, what you got for us?
We got some good old correspondence is what we got. We have a message from Lozzie. And Lozzie writes, "Hi, What Were the Mate crew. I've been thoroughly enjoying the podcast. I'm on episode 15 now. Ooh, just around the time we start playing the game. And I thought I'd send you a quick email. Given your backlog of listener questions, hopefully it might be answered by the time I catch up." It certainly will be. "I've been wondering how, when you become famous and begin to expand the War with the Mate brand, you would adopt the podcast for a live audience. The off-menu podcast with James Acaster and Ed Gamble have sold out 5 show run at the Royal Albert Hall, so I don't see why War with the Mate won't do similar, especially considering that fundamentally both podcasts are about an imaginary dinner, which will never happen." I've tied that in perfectly. I forgot that was in here. "When performing live, do you expect it to be difficult to keep the audience engaged for the first 2 to 4 hours of absolute silence while you fill out the spreadsheets and move the tokens around the ludicrous Campaign for North Africa board? Speaking of the board, the Royal Albert Hall might finally give you the space required to set the game up actually on a table. Perhaps the set budget would even stretch to chairs as well." Oh, it really takes me back to being on the floor. "Would you consider a video feed of the board onto a large view screen on the stage? Or would that ruin the podcasting magic? Perhaps for your live performances, you could get a celebrity guest on who could commentate on exciting board game action taking place. If so, which celebrity would you like to comment on your gameplay? Any other adaptations you would make to format it so it would better suit a live audience? Cheers, Loz. Well, Loz, first of all, you need to catch up because you'll realize that whatever waxings of fame and fortune that we might have alluded to foolishly at the very start of this, which I don't even think we did, are long since gone, because we are now dialed into playing this game, and this is already difficult to make engaging, I'll be honest. I don't understand why anyone's listening to this. Because what we just talked about is us getting confused about the game even now.
Yeah.
Talking about the stuff that we've lost. None of it matters. None of it matters.
Well, I guess, I mean, I appreciate the comparison to the Off-Menu podcast, but again, that's two very successful comedians talking to a third famous person.
Yeah, so I guess there's a lot to unpack there.
I'll say this, as far as any live stuff goes, this is not a spectator sport.
Then why did we make a podcast?
Because if it was, we would have done video.
That's a good point. I think in terms of people watching it, yes, there's a live audience for this is a very interesting concept and one that we've joked about a little bit. I
don't know how it would work.
I don't know how this would work.
Format of the pod to my crippling issues with public speaking.
There are a plethora of issues that would come into play. We couldn't play the game traditionally. There'd have to be, I think, definitely maybe an air combat session.
That might work.
Or close assault, and people could watch us have a breakdown. And I guess we wouldn't have any interaction with the audience for about half of the stage show, because it would just be us talking to each other frustratedly in hushed tones.
Looking things up.
While the audience talks amongst themselves.
Yeah.
I guess that, you know, the sort of interlude between the support band and the main band, where the lights are on, you get your drinks from the bar, you go out for a smoke. That's the part where we're doing the actual game.
Which is 8 hours.
And then after that, we reconvene when people have sort of seen that going on in the background. And then we do common ground, I guess. You give a bit of a monologue on a history segment where the audience listens to you essentially read a book. And then, I don't know, that's it. Yeah, I have no idea how it would work, but it's a very fun concept. And it's very flattering that you think we could do that, Lozzie.
Which celebrity guest would you want?
We need to pick out a celebrity guest. That's an interesting one.
This isn't necessarily a celebrity guest, but I think it would be very entertaining to get like a panel, and it's also an immense waste of their time. Get a panel of people with actual military experience. Like if you could get like a general and an admiral to do like the commentary on like, when the foolish move striking into the desert.
Just a backseat driver.
People who know what they're talking about.
I don't. The real fear I have with that, though, is because of how
the game doesn't map closely enough to reality.
Well, not only that, because I think it's quite granular and quite realistic. My concern is I'd get so frustrated with the game, I don't want to snap at a general on stage. Because
no, you're correct.
As if I know what I'm fucking talking about.
Shut up, general. No, you can't.
Yeah, here you go. I just throw the rule book at him. You read these rules and then you tell me what's going on. You weren't there. None of us were there. We don't know if this is okay or not. The people who were there are long since gone. And that's the segue into the history segment. As I get beaten up off stage by several, former armed forces. I don't want to do that. But I think if I was, I don't know, maybe let's get Ian McKellen.
That'd be fun.
Why not? I met the guy once.
Yeah, I'd just like to meet him, so I guess.
I met him at a bar here in town. He'd been doing a performance at the theatre, and I bumped into him after a work night out. And it was actually before work night out, and I missed a lot of the work night out, hanging out with people at the bar, waiting for the chance to get a picture with him. The guy was quite leery. Not like rowdy, but just very drunk.
Wasn't probably not appreciating the crowd of people at the bar.
Well, he gave his time. He gave his time very generously as he walked out and got a picture with me. So my phone was, it had the thing where you've got no storage left on your phone, so you go to take a picture and it won't let you. So I was stood there frantically while his entourage are like, hurry up, and I'm like, I'm trying, just deleting pictures of me and my loved ones, trying to get this picture in there, and I got it.
Also, the classic thing with your phone is it's never on more than 10% battery.
That is a fun thing. Well, I put up I will get into this actually, some of the stuff that we've been posting this week on the Instagram. I put up a screenshot earlier today of the website, or the shop rather, and I had to crop out the sort of top and bottom to make sure that it looks aesthetically pleasing, and I just saw the little 1% in the top right corner from my phone battery, and I was like, wow, that is just the perfect,
pretty classic.
It's very on brand for me,
I guess. Should we segue into that quickly?
Yes. So, well, first of all, thank you for that, Lozzie. Yeah. In terms of live stage show, God, we're a long way off, but the ambition, we've got it. We're doing this game.
It's a fun idea.
It's up there. Hey, one day, guys. But yes, touching on that, one thing we did do, which is a little ambitious, we finally addressed the merch question, because we've had a lot of messages come through on the Instagram, and we had quite a few emails that we've read out as well about merch, asking when it's going to come out. We've released some. We've actually put it out there.
We're doing like a trial run?
It is. It's going to be up for about maybe a couple of weeks. And we've got a few limited designs. We've got a cap, got some mugs, got a jumper, got a blanket because I couldn't find a poncho. We've got a bunch of other designs which the website won't let us currently publish because we've got some sort of server issue, which I'm waiting to hear back from their tech support, and they haven't got back to me yet. I've done like a bunch of designs, not at work, of course. I've done a bunch of designs in my spare time, and I've tried to publish them. It's not letting me. But if you are interested in any sort of merch, a bit of a disclaimer, if you're in the UK or Australia or anywhere that's not America, the shipping is very extortionate.
We do think we have a solution for that in the future.
Yes.
But this is very much a getting used to the store, seeing what the design process is.
Yes, we've
put some stuff out.
We keep on trying to get it out there. You've asked a lot of times. And what we do want to say first is thank you, because people have already, within the first day, put out orders, which is crazy. We did not expect ever to be selling merch for War with the Maid. That's absolutely mental. So thank you to everyone who's done that. As of right now, everyone who has put in an order, it is currently being shipped. It's out there en route to you, from what I've seen on the website. So hang tight. That shipping that you've paid out your fucking eyeballs for, hopefully it pays dividends and gets to you soon. The shipping thing will be fixed, ideally, in the full rollout. But if you are interested in having a look at what's going on,
sort of limited run.
Limited run. We're going to pop the link in the description, and it's on the Instagram at the moment on a story. I'll need to put that somewhere so you can find it a bit easier as well. So by all means, have a look. We've kept the cost as low as possible to make sure that it's going to cost you guys as little as possible, but the shipping we can't actually change at the moment. So have a look. Thank you to everyone who has ordered. It's wild. And yeah, watch this space. In the next couple of months, we'll roll out something that is a lot more economic. But yeah, just wanted to really show appreciation for that, because that's mad that people have bought our stuff. So if you're wandering around with your caps and your mugs, we're incredibly grateful for it. It's nothing we ever expected to happen.
Bizarre, but
yeah,
in a really good way.
Very surreal. But touching back into the listeners and the community, which is what this is about.
Oh yeah,
you also have an email.
Yes, I do. From Yoni. Hello, gents. After listening to y'all's episode on Balbo's escapades in my hometown of Chicago, I simply had to go see this insufferable monument for myself. So this past weekend, my spouse and I trundled up to the lake in search of the Ostian Column. You won't find any signs or direct paths to it nowadays, but if you know where to look, you'll find a thin corpse overlooking the millionaire's yacht's dock in Lake Michigan. There, behind a chain-link cage, is a decaying column on a crumbling limestone plinth. Sad as it may seem at first, it's nevertheless quite shocking on a number of levels. First, it's an old goddamn thing. Gotta hand it to the ancients, they knew how to build ornamental columns. Second, the fucking plinth is the most fascist thing you can imagine. Four fasci on each corner, with inscriptions on the walls of the base, one in Italian and one in English, extolling fascist Italy and Mussolini. Lastly, just as I was given the statue the finger, five military helicopters flew overhead, a reminder that our own government is actively deploying troops into our city against our will. Ugh. History sure is echoey these days. Anyway, love your podcast. Sorry for the downer, but at least I get to live in a world with you subtle, humble, and brave dudes in my podcast feed. Keep up the good work, your Shytown matey, Yoni. And we're going to put this picture up on the Instagram.
Yes, we have got approval from you. So thank you for that. First of all, for sending it in and going on a little What Were the Made History field trip is awesome. I'm glad that we've heard back from you with that, because that's very fun that we've reached someone who's nearby and is able to give us some first-hand experience as to what's going on over there. So, yeah, we've seen the picture and it's...
it's fantastic.
It's very funny. flipping the bird to the monument. Balbo is, by all accounts, a...
scumbag.
Yeah, really bad individual. So yeah. I guess, yeah, nothing. No love lost there. But the picture's awesome. The fact you went there is crazy cool. I keep on forgetting that we got so many listeners in Chicago.
Yeah.
Because it's one of the highest hit areas at the moment for us.
Yeah.
Australia and Chicago. So if there's anyone else in Chicago, it's just a bus ride away. That was another picture that was included, actually, isn't it?
Yeah, because there's a Balbo Street. So that's got some people in it, so we probably won't post it. But it's just Balbo's name on the, like...
the little display of the next stop.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's got little Balbo above,
yeah.
Which is, yeah,
I wonder how many people are just don't know it's a guy.
Yeah, that's a good point because, well, I mean, people would be like, it's a guy's name, but there's so many places even here where...
but also just Balbo doesn't inherit, like... I guess, yeah. Like people who take it every day are like, what's
it? I guess with America being such a melting pot, I imagine there's probably a lot of like streets and areas named after a lot of different cultures,
yeah,
and people from different like regions of the world, whereas in the UK it's very much a case of it's just going to be like Stevenson or Johnson, yeah, or Churchill. It's all names where it's like, well, this is clearly a name that we're familiar with, it's a Georgian name, whereas you look at other countries, it'll be like, no, this could be a name from anywhere in the world,
yeah,
or it could be a word that has other relevance. So cool that you went on this field trip, and thank you very much for sending in the picture as well. The ties between the past and present, in terms of history, there are some interesting parallels in the world at the moment. Yeah,
echoey is a good description.
Yes, history does tend to echo, and yeah, the state of the world now, state of the world then, it's dicey. So we'll, I guess, on the back of that, try and stay away from the horrible nature of right here, right now, and we'll delve into the past.
Horrible nature of the past.
So, we're seeing out Balbo.
Yes, let's see him out. Quote as usual.
Let's hear it.
A handsome Alpine soldier, a great aviator, an authentic revolutionary, the only one capable of killing me. Mussolini, the day after his death.
Wow, what a salty little git.
Yeah, so when we left him, they've walked into Mussolini posing in his big office.
Oh, I forgot about that.
Saying he's going to declare war. He goes, I'm ready to invade England. It's him and Bagnoli in there. And according to Bagnolio's account, he replies to this after like a lengthy pause, going, "Your Excellency, you know perfectly well that we are absolutely unprepared. We have received, you have received complete reports every week. We have about 20 divisions with 70% of the necessary equipment and training, and about another 20% divisions with 50%. We have no tanks. The Air Force, as you know, is grounded. That's to say nothing of stores. We have not even sufficient shirts for the army."
Not even enough black shirts?
No. In such a state of affairs, how is it possible to declare war? Mussolini just brushes this aside, even though Balbo also agrees with him at this point. Mussolini said the war was as good as won by the Germans already.
Mm.
It would be over by September with the British either surrendering or their island invaded. Mussolini thought of it this way. He needed a few hundred dead Italians in order to claim Italy's share of the post-war spoils at the peace conference when he sat down to negotiate with a victorious Hitler. Approximately 450,000 Italians died in the war.
I mean, yeah, this guy had everything wrong.
Yeah, it's just such a bizarre view of it. Like, even if it was that, like, we need a few hundred dead of our people. Not great.
I just see it really. I'm struggling to determine whether or not he was like deluded, and he was looking at like information that did not indicate that, but just believed it vehemently anyway. Or if things really did look that positive from the Axis side at this point, where he was like, "This is a won battle already."
I think at that point it looked like potentially a won battle for the Germans. Like the Americans weren't involved; they just blitzkrieged France. But also like. As the thing, like, they're telling him none of our divisions are ready.
Yeah.
They don't have shirts. Like, that's several levels below guns and equipment. Like,
yeah, that's it. Like, it's, I guess, yeah, you guys might not all be uniformed, but it speaks to the unpreparedness of the situation. And if you're being told that, maybe take a bit of pause and go, well, why not?
Yeah.
Should we not have that?
Because there was a bit, they're running on a kind of a high. They've done the war in Ethiopia and stuff. They've been, like, victorious in wars over the last 10 years. But they're wars against, like, less developed colonies. And those wars have had a significant cost. Like, they're wearing them down.
Yeah.
So it's like, yeah, you beat Ethiopia, who had no planes. You lost, like, 100. Like, you're now fighting the British, who are at this point probably the world superpower.
I mean, yeah, you're coming on the back of the First World War. Yeah. You're looking at a very formidable force.
I think it's, yeah, delusion.
It's got to be.
But, yeah. This is also, like, a final sort of nail in the coffin of their growing animosity between the two of them.
Mm-hmm.
Balbo does not rate the Nazis' leadership at all. Like, he meets Goering and Himmler when they come to visit the concentration camps. He's met Hitler and Goebbels, and he doesn't have a high opinion of any of them.
That's interesting.
Yeah. He has a bit of respect for Goering because he's an airman as well.
Oh, okay.
But only on similar that background level.
Yeah.
Not. So he's deeply upset by this decision. He believes it'll destroy fascist Italy, it'll destroy his career, and it'll cost him his life. Correct on all counts. He thinks the war is going to last 6 months and he'll die in action.
Okay, interesting.
And he also believes that the Germans will betray Italy, which does happen.
Yeah.
Like, for instance, Italy surrenders before the invasion of Italy. And the fighting there is like another year because it's just occupied by Germans.
Yeah.
It's like, you've lost sovereignty. And when they were talking about it in the, like, Grand Council of Fascism, he reportedly had an outburst where he goes, "As for the rest of you, there won't be enough lampposts to hang you in the Piazza Fienza."
God.
By the end of the war, everyone in that room is dead, either executed by hardcore fascists or red partisans without trial.
Oh.
So he's completely correct. This is also part of the reason Italy never has a Nuremberg or Tokyo trials. Because its leadership gets wiped out before the end of the war.
Well, I did not know that. That's interesting. That's a very chilling, like, scene. The idea of these people all meeting and then before long they're all dead.
Yeah, but it's also like when we talked about Graziani, he got away with it. He slipped through that net because he wasn't part of the Grand Council.
Yes,
but because of that, Italy never had the like reckoning.
Yes.
So guys like that slip through.
Yeah, I mean, we talked about that. The fact he got his sort of like his triumphant ending where he got away.
Yeah. So he's resigned to his fate, but he's going to carry on his duties. He heads back to Libya. He's quoted as saying, "The situation's practically hopeless. Caught between the British in Egypt and the French in Tunisia, we're like slices of ham in a sandwich."
A sandwich analogy feels lighthearted given the circumstances.
Yeah. So, we'll move on to the events of the 28th of June, 1940, the last day of his life.
Here we go.
His final flight, it's unsure whether it was meant to be an inspection in a moral building, like, attempt, or there's also reports of them hunting British armoured cars in the desert. Doesn't really matter the way it turns out. He leaves Derna in a convoy of two Savoy Macchiaretti SM-79 bombers.
Derna, a place on the map as well. I believe, yes. I've got an airfield there.
And I believe these are your bombers at the minute.
Yes, yeah.
Yeah, one's quite piloted by him. They're typically built for five. His has nine people in it.
Okay.
Also, neither plane has a radio aboard.
That feels... This feels a bit like when the Titanic went and there's a conspiracy theories about it being rigged to go down.
Yeah. I actually think the Titanic... I listened to that podcast series about the... Was it Tim Batt from...
Worst Idea of All Time.
Yeah. That's much more compelling than the conspiracy theories about his death, Balbo's death. He hoped to rendezvous at the port of Tobruk. They do get messages through to expect them, but, like, no more details than that. And just before he sets out, the British and a bunch of Bellenheim bombers bomb Tobruk, coming from the same direction he's about to come from.
Oh, okay, that's interesting.
Yeah, so everyone there is on, like, high alert because they've literally just been bombed and he's not answering the radio. His plane comes in first of the two. They are told to expect his arrival. However, the naval batteries at the harbour, including the guns on the Italian cruiser, the San Giuliano.
Oh.
Yes.
Now that is that's a name I know.
Yeah.
Because that bad boy is currently half sunk in the bay.
Yeah. At this point, it's not half sunk. It's a mobile anti-air battery. What's meant to happen is they're meant to, according to regulations, fly over this point at 300 meters in height, do a 360, and then continue as another, like, stop check of, like, is this a friendly or not?
Okay, yeah.
Balbo ignores this. He flies in at 700 meters and doesn't make a circle, so he just flies straight in. There's a variety of things that contribute to what happened next. One, the lack of signaling, the frayed nerves from everyone there, and then going back to the supply issues, most of the gun crews are undertrained. They also don't have enough binoculars.
Oh, God, that's not a good thing.
So they, like,
that's very Titanic.
It's just a spot in the sky, and they don't have the equipment to be like, oh, that's one of our planes. As a result of this confusion, a single Italian machine gunner let off four or five rounds before realizing his mistake. This is too late. Balbo's biographer describes what happens next. The first volley, however, set off an entire anti-aircraft network. Everyone was firing, from the cruiser Giorgio, from submarines, from ships. A real inferno was unleashed around the two aircraft. Balbo realizes he's under friendly fire at this point. The other plane peels off and gains altitude and just leaves. Balbo is like, I'm just going to land faster.
No, it's not going to work.
Opens his landing gear as he's coming down, which increases drag, slows the plane down, and makes it a bigger target. It's unknown exactly what got him. It was either a shell from the San Giorgio or a 20mm incendiary shell from a naval battery. Regardless of what it was, it struck his plane's fuel tanks and the flaming bomber slid to its left side, and so Balbo's craft plummeted into the bank overlooking the harbour, accompanied by the cheers of his own men who'd believed they'd shot down an enemy plane. The plane burned for hours and Balbo was only identified by his dental records. When informed of his death, Mussolini merely shrugged. And that is Balbo.
So Balbo died as he lived, with cheers as he landed.
Yeah. Just an entirely preventable death.
It sounds...
On every... Like, because when I started reading this, I was like, this conspiracy stuff is like... I love a good conspiracy. And it's like, all this animosity between him and Mussolini is like, oh, that might be... It's just him not doing anything right. Like, no radio... Not doing the signals, like this personal glory thing just drives him.
It feels incredibly, it evokes thoughts of Icarus.
Yeah.
It's the guy became too cocky. It's hubris that killed him. It's him being like, well, I'll just fly the way that I want to fly.
Yeah.
And the fact that he tries to land faster is insane, because all they see, if they've not got enough binoculars, is a craft, a bomber,
yeah,
getting closer,
yeah,
rapidly. It's like, yeah, oh, cool. So, I don't know what level of tactics have been employed of the Japanese and like kamikaze bombers at this point.
I don't believe these have been invented. They've been invented yet. Aircraft carriers aren't a thing at this. No, they're not a thing at this point.
Yeah, I'm just wondering how many like thoughts were like flying through the minds of this bomber's getting real close, real fast. But regardless, it's a bomber.
Yeah.
If any of them clocked that, at the very least, it's just there's so many ways that could have went differently. And you talking about the guy there who lets off the little burst and just be like, oh shit, bit too, oh, hang on, oh my god, they're all firing.
It reminds me, you've seen Lord of the Rings, right?
Yeah, yeah.
You know in Two Towers when the first guy lets the shot the arrow at him?
Yes. Pump?
It's that, but if he was aiming at Gandalf.
And then they all fire at Gandalf.
Yeah.
But it's also because Gandalf showed up dressed as an orc.
Yeah, but it is that one, like one, I think someone was going to lose their situation when he was here. Like he'd fucked it before he got here. But it is the thing of like one guy loses his nerve and then the entire network and the sky becomes an inferno.
It's like the opposite of that guy, you know the story of the guy during the Cold War who was given the instructions to launch the missiles,
yeah,
but then didn't do it.
Yes.
It's like the inverse of that. I mean, much smaller scale, yeah, obviously, but a guy who just jumps the gun a little bit and then it's like, oh, I shouldn't have, they're all doing it now anyway.
Yeah.
Maybe in the end I won't get blamed for this, but it would seem history has still remembered this man.
Oh, they don't know. I don't believe they know the guy. Well, they just know it came from a machine gun emplacement, but.
Oh, so the San Giorgio that's on the map that plays a part in the game, a pretty damaging part for me because it's blocking my harbour.
Yeah.
Well, that may be the same vessel that actually shot down old Balbo.
Seems it's that or.
At the very least, it started
it certainly contributed to it.
Yeah. Wow. What an interesting sliver of history, and what a. A tragically preventable death for Balbo. However, yeah, will history miss him? I mean, sounds like the people of Chicago back then may have to an extent. However, nowadays, based on the state of the current monument, not so much now.
Yeah. I also think there's a concerted effort by Mussolini to erase him.
I mean, I wouldn't be shocked on his mentality.
There was the thing, he could only be mentioned in newspapers once a month. That was even before he died.
I guess that month it was his obituary.
And Mussolini didn't give a public eulogy for him.
Yeah,
that quote's from like private. In fact, the only public eulogy, he got several. Like the British dropped a reef out of a plane, being like, I can't remember exactly what it says, but it's like, we mourn the loss of like an aviator or something.
That's interesting.
But his enemies were more like cut up about it.
That's such a strange thing about war, isn't it? The sort of admiration of the enemy. It's that sort of like honorable fight.
Yeah.
It's such an odd especially you compare that to the world now and the sort of way warfare is carried out and how divorced from the sort of actual killing people are now. It's like,
yeah,
it's such a strange sentiment. Even then as well, with it being a fight against fascism, it's an ideological fight. It's such a weird thing to try and like process.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's odd. It raises all sorts of weird thoughts. But his demise sounds completely avoidable.
Yeah, and also I think it's the end result of living the life he did is you, like the Icarus thing, you fly too close to the sun one too many times because he's been doing that and getting away with it.
Yeah, but this time he showboated in an active war zone.
Yeah.
And he died.
Yeah.
Regardless of whether or not there's conspiratorial elements at work or any other number of factors, he and his behaviour did play into his own demise.
Yeah, the like cult of action and the desire to be. Because like when he was 14, he wanted to go and invade was it Albania?
I think it was, yeah.
Like, that is who he, and it's that thing of like, he never grew beyond crusading or that like big flashy history stuff.
Yeah.
It's always that
ego
like,
killed him. It's yeah. such a strange guy.
Very interesting. Bad, bad guy. But
yeah, really bad guy.
A lot of what ifs in his thing of like, what if he had cooed Mussolini or.
Yeah.
Then you might have had a fascist Italy that didn't join the Axis.
Yeah.
So maybe you have a fascist nation survive World War II.
Yeah.
Like, could have been a very different.
It boggles the mind.
Yeah.
Makes you wonder where things could have went if he wasn't such a smug, arrogant guy.
Oh, yeah.
But we'll never know.
No.
We'll never know. All we know is that he's gone. We're here.
And we need to mend some rifts we've created today. So do we have some common ground?
And now for something nicer. A little oasis in the war. It's time for some common ground. I'm trying the intro for common ground. I'm recording. Maybe.
Yeah.
We don't want to be Balbo and Mussolini.
Oh no.
We don't want to be Mussolini and German High Command. We want to make sure we see eye to eye.
Oh yeah.
However,
okay.
I've got to say, Andy, I'm concerned because common ground's intention is to bring us together at the end of each episode so that we can go on next week. And not hate each other's guts.
Okay.
But I don't know how easy it'll be to get you on board with this week's common ground.
Okay, it feels like you've misunderstood the assignment, but hit me with it.
I think they should just stop beaming adverts into our sleep.
What? No.
Right. Hear me out.
This is that Futurama episode.
So I've seen this before. I've seen the whole thing of like the idea of putting adverts into people's dreams. And how dystopian it seems.
Just before we get much further, are we just making an assumption this technology exists?
Yes. So this okay. is yeah. This is under the presumption it can be done.
Yes.
So and let's face it, it probably can be to some degree.
I mean, that is kind of what advertising puts stuff in your subconscious, and then.
So I was thinking, and this came on the back of a conversation we had the other day about a hypothetical thing we saw, and it was a shit post somewhere. And it was, would you take £1 million every single day, but at a random point every single day, your subconscious is flashbanged and you...
Have to watch all of Cars 2.
Yes, you see yeah. all of Cars 2 play out in real time for you, but time freezes, so you don't actually lose any real life time. But it happens at any point, and how many days would you do that for? And we talked about this, we were like, you could do that for a month. Yeah. There'll be a bit of like psychological trauma that comes from it. You don't lose any real time, though.
Yeah.
And that's how time works in dreams as well. It's dilated in such a way that you could experience thousands of hours of advertisements and you don't lose any real life time.
Why is that a good thing?
Because right now, everything is full of adverts. We've found ourselves back along the loop of streaming services that you pay for. Like, remember Netflix? They didn't have adverts. Now they do.
Yeah.
I mean, yes, you can pay for the extra premium super plan where you don't have them. Or you can pay for the one that the everyman can't really afford, and it's got adverts again.
Okay, so...
We cycled back round, we've got backwards.
Okay, so...
We need to get rid of the adverts.
Adverts are filtering into every aspect of our lives, so you want to add them to sleep.
No, I want to exchange them.
Okay. Oh, okay. You didn't say that. That I might be on board with.
We get rid of adverts everywhere.
In the waking world.
Everywhere apart from sleep. The waking world, there is no more advertisements. Ever.
Okay.
Right. So, selling point to the advertisers. When I wake up from a dream, I think about that dream for a lot of my day. I'm like, why did I think about that? Why was that playing on my mind?
Yeah.
What is it? And dreams are supposed to have meanings. I think talking about dreams is the most boring thing you can possibly do.
Oh, yeah.
I think it's just a bad idea. It's just bland. But it sits with you. A dream sits with you because it's something that's been playing on your mind.
I mean, a lot of people forget dreams pretty much as soon as you wake up.
Yes. Yeah. And this is a way for it to play in your subconscious, because it will, dreams do, and the amount they'll have to pay for this, it's going to skyrocket. Advertisers are getting their money tenfold.
Well, yeah, I assume they either need some bizarre mind control infrastructure, or everyone has like a helmet.
Exactly. There's going to be stuff. The way this works, it'll be crazy. The access to streaming services, maybe it's exclusive to people who opt into this program.
Okay.
And it gets rid of adverts. It means when you're awake, when you're living, when you're alive, when you're experiencing life, you don't need to worry about adverts. And when you're asleep, you're already asleep. You're not losing any time. It's your downtime. You're locked off. It doesn't matter. So put the adverts there, and then you wake up, and then, yes, it might play on your subconscious. Maybe you'll buy a thing or two, but it doesn't really fuck our day up. Because that's the annoying thing for me. I'm losing real life time.
I do get that, like, when you're like, I'm going to watch something on YouTube, and there's two, like, trailers that are longer than the actual video you want to watch. Or what happens, like, if you want to watch a film or a game trailer, and they just play the trailer as an advert before you watch the thing.
Yeah, I mean, I've just gotten to The Sopranos. I'm watching it for the first time, and I'm watching it on an actual streaming service, so you're welcome, HBO. I haven't pirated it. But one of the trade-offs with that, of being an honest, genuine man, a hard-working, honest guy, is that I'm spending my hard-earned money on being able to watch something, and the trade-off is I get adverts every now and then. I thought we were past this, HBO. I thought we were past this big network, but apparently not, because I'm still being force-fed, like, 2 minutes of adverts. And I know, yeah, you compare that to television, and usually it'd be like 3 or 4 minutes of adverts. But when did this become fine again? So
no, there is something that happened.
Yeah, something's gone wrong. So get rid of that. I want to watch an episode of The Sopranos all the way through without any sort of interruption. And I will give up my dreams for that.
Fuck, when you put it like that, it's an even worse idea.
Oh, sorry, I'm going to backpedal. Because the good thing is, they can slot that in there and you can still have dreams. Because time doesn't matter in your sleep.
Okay.
So it works perfectly.
Can I offer you an alternative?
I guess so, because it's common ground. I guess
this is based on us having like dream technology, right?
It is.
Okay. We still get rid of advertising.
Yes.
But instead of advertising to us in our dreams, they use our subconscious to mine Bitcoin.
That's a different idea.
I like the idea of offloading stuff into sleep.
But you're talking about mining Bitcoin instead.
That's also, you know, or something useful.
But advertising can go on forever. Bitcoin's finite.
Yeah, that's a...
You can advertise stuff forever. This could be a permanent out. You wouldn't need to watch an advert ever again.
It is tempting. You thought I'd hate it. I don't hate it.
See, I, you know
it's what? It's deeply dystopian in a way that, like, chills me.
It is, but let's face it, we're going that way already.
I mean, we live in a dystopia.
Get ahead of the curve.
It's just a boring one, so we might as well add some fun tech.
Yeah, fun tech. You know, you can get into the dream advertising business. I'm sure that'll be fun for creatives or crazy people. But... yeah, you know, if you're deeply evil, deeply troubled, maybe you'll want to do that. And if you just want to be a normal person who doesn't want adverts to ruin The Sopranos, then you can do this.
So this is all pre-roll ads.
Every kind of advertising that you can,
like,
think of.
Posters.
Apart from, I don't know, maybe like some of the fun ones you can keep. Like the ones where it's like, you know, you see an advert online and it's like, that was a funny one.
Okay.
You can keep the funny ones. Actually, you know what? We'll have to get rid of the funny ones as well. Just, I think, to be fair, we'll get rid of the funny ones too. But I think this, no more. Imagine that, Andy. No more adverts.
Okay, I want to keep my dreams, but I like the idea of focusing adverts in one place.
Right? How about your?
What about this?
Your dreams have ad breaks.
No. What about this?
No.
Just no. It's like jury duty.
Mm-hmm.
You get randomly selected, and it's like 2 or 3 days, maybe. But that's all your adverts for like the next 3 or 4 years. So I get to keep my dreams, and they're gone in the daytime, but...
I don't think the ad companies will go for that.
Yeah, but they won't go for what you're suggesting. They'll just add that to their current stuff.
If it's a swap out, I think we can rig the industry to do this.
Okay.
But I feel like if it's a lottery, they can't then target ads towards people as much as they want all the time. Whereas with mine, they can do it every single night. And no one has a choice. They love that.
I mean, they'll like it.
They know people want to watch The Sopranos, so they're doing it to them. So people have to sleep. So providing the tech, there's no technology. I mean, if there is technology that stops you having to sleep, we'll bin that okay, so this happens.
Because I just like sleep. I don't want you to ruin it. We put it on stuff you have to do. So every toilet has like a screen or a speaker in it. So when you're pissing or shitting, you get your ads.
Actually, you know what? Absolutely. No, absolutely. Because I just watch stuff on the toilet anyway.
Yeah.
So that's
instead
fine.
Instead, it's just your focused advert time.
Oh, you know what? Fine. Oh, God, yeah, that works too.
Yeah.
Right, okay, so toilets and sleep.
Yeah, and then we can use the dream technology for something else. Maybe a future common ground.
Well, no, you'd still have it in your dreams.
Oh, okay. You also just have it when you...
Yeah, I'm trying to sell it to big advertising.
Oh, okay.
Because they're listening.
Oh, okay, sorry, I thought you were pitching to me, not... Oh, then it's a great idea.
Oh, it's both.
Oh, okay.
I'm pitching to you as a friend, and to make this realistic, we have to pitch to them.
Oh, okay.
And I actually want this to an extent, so because I don't want any more adverts when I watch The Sopranos.
Would you like me to just buy you a box set?
No, I don't want to watch DVDs. Because then I have to swap the DVDs.
Oh, okay.
I don't want any interruption. I want everything to be at my leisure. I want immediate gratification from everything.
Yeah, that is how things work. Okay. You were right. I'm never going to fully join you on this one. But I think there's some common ground there.
We found common ground.
We put the adverts and stuff you have to do, free up the rest of your time.
And there it is, ladies and gentlemen. It's beautiful and it works. And that's what this always is.
I'm not sorry. I'm just now picturing falling asleep and like a company's paid for it to be like, this night of dreams is brought to you ad-free by Toshiba, and then you just get to dream.
Pre-roll sleep ads. Well, speaking of advertising, if you want to send anything to us, not in our dreams, but in our inbox, our email address is info@warwithamate.co.uk. Send anything over that you wish. Whether it's a picture of you giving the bird to a monument to a fascist figure of history, whether it's an esoteric comic strip, whether it's anything in between, we'll happily have a look at it and we'll wax about it on the pod.
And speaking of getting in contact, at some point our GoDaddy changed our website so that it was a chat
bot
instead of a contact form. I've removed the chat bot and there's just a contact us page on the website. And I think people have been trying to get in touch with us because I just keep getting emails through from the form saying, I have a question. So if that was you, sorry, please use the new contact form.
Yes, if you've been under the impression falsely that we were sat manning the chat 24/7, I'm very sorry. That wasn't the case. GoDaddy pulled the rug out from under us and didn't tell us they changed the contact form into a live web chat, which we never have manned. I don't even know how we would man that. I don't know what the interface is. So, sorry, whoever it is that's been sending those messages, or if it's more than one person, fire over a web form, it's on there now. We also have an Instagram, which is War With A Mate. The merch store, it's temporary, it's only up for about 2 weeks. So if you're listening to this in the far future, we might have a new one by then, but
we
right now
have a better one.
But we'll have a better one, but right now it's there's a post on the Instagram about us hitting 100 followers. It's in the description. We'll pop it in the description for this episode. If you're outside of the US, the shipping is extortionate. We've tried to bring costs as low as possible. It's just some fun stuff. If you want to get some, it's great, and we'd love you supporting the brand of War With A Mate. That's crazy that people want to do that. So thank you if you have. Thank you if you will. Thank you if you're having a look. And we'll work on a bigger thing in future. But any way you want to get in touch with us or do anything relating to this, listening to it, we appreciate it. And from me, James, thank you for listening.
From me, Andy, stay subtle, humble, and brave.
Good night.